Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Hello and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH, and 96.5 TIC. Our guest this week is Connecticut U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. We are going to be discussing numerous issues surrounding recent conflict between the United States, Israel, and Iran. Senator Blumenthal, welcome to the program.
Wonderful to be with you, Morgan. Thanks for having me.
There's surely no shortage of material that we can be talking about this week, but I'd like to start with your statement from Sunday, June 22nd, which was the day after the U.S. struck three nuclear sites in Iran. You began in your statement as saying, quote, "I continue to believe a nuclear-armed Iran is a threat to the entire world, including America," end quote. Iran has regularly been threatening the United States and other parts of the world since 1979, which in large part is much of your career in politics. Based on your experience over all of these years, how much of a credible threat do you believe Iran has been and is?
That's a long time in history to cover in a single sentence, but the simple answer to your question is, I believe Iran has been a threat for some time in varying degrees. For example, the President of the United States, then Barack Obama, negotiated a deal, the JCPOA, that contained Iran's ability to enrich nuclear fuel, that is uranium, at 5%. President Trump, in effect, tore up the deal. And then more recently, uranium was enriched to a rate of 60%, which put it very closely within reach of making a bomb. Now, there were differences, as there have been throughout that whole history, as to how long it might take for them to develop a nuclear weapon and put it on a missile, which is a complicated process. But I believe that Iran has been a threat for that entire period of time because it has said, in effect, it wants to destroy the United States, literally death to the United States. And it has also said death to Israel. So through that nuclear threat, but also through its proxy terrorist organizations, the Houthis in Yemen, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza, it has literally killed people, including Americans, and a lot more Israelis. It has threatened shipping in the Red Sea. It has caused terrorist incidents in other countries around the world. Iran has been a toxic element during that whole time, and the nuclear threat may have varied in degrees, but it has become much more serious in the last months, and that is why I said in that first sentence, a nuclear armed Iran is a threat to the entire world, including the United States. But confronting that threat requires a strategy as well as strength. And I went on in my statement to outline my feeling about how we can construct a strategy and, if necessary, use military force to counter a nuclear-armed Iran.
And we're going to draw on some other aspects of your statement as we go on in our conversation this morning on Face Connecticut. You appeared on Fox News Sunday with Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina on Sunday, June 15th, 2025, which was a week, just about a week, before the U.S. had attacked the Iranian sites. You said that Iran was close to producing 10 nuclear bombs. Most reports agree that they were close to weapons-grade enriched uranium. However, you have President Trump saying that they were only weeks away. A CBS report points to an intelligence summary for the military's Joint Chiefs of Staff that found it was more like 3 to 8 months out, but they didn't find or conclude they were actively working to make a bomb. Why has there been so much conflict over U.S. intelligence on the timeline related to Iran's nuclear program and these bombs?
You're absolutely right that there have been differing opinions. And by the way, there remain differing opinions. Even as we speak, I left a briefing this week, a classified briefing with scant comfort that we know even now how much damage was done by the attack on Iran and how long it may take them to rebuild their nuclear capacity. And I emphasize that the military men and women who executed that mission did it with extraordinary competence and courage. Their skill and bravery is going to put that mission, I think, in the annals of military history as one of the great accomplishments of all time. But the intelligence needed to do an assessment, a damage battle assessment, so far has not been compiled. And even in the months and years before the attack on Iran, intelligence has been difficult to compile because we have no clear access to what is going on. Now, the International Atomic Energy Agency, as you know, did a report shortly before the strike on Iran's nuclear capability saying they have violated their non-proliferation obligations because they've enriched uranium to 60%, which is close to what they would need to build a bomb. We know there is that threat. We also know that the strike on Iran seems to have done severe damage to a number of its facilities, the three sites where centrifuges are believed to have been operating, including Fodor, which is under that mountain, 250 feet below the surface, protected by concrete and granite. So the intelligence so far indicates that certainly they have been set back. But you're absolutely right that we have aerial intelligence, we have on the ground human surveillance. The Israelis have some sources, but pinpointing with precision and certainty what their timeline is depends in part on their intentions and who is in power. And right now, we know that a lot of their military leadership has been killed by some of these strikes by Americans, some by the Israelis. And we have to make absolutely clear the gaps in our intelligence. But here is one thing to be absolutely sure. A nuclear-armed Iran continues to be a threat because as long as they've agreed not to produce enriched uranium and not to produce a weapon, they can always reconstitute their program. And so we should have no false sense of security about Iran as a threat to the world, including the United States, if it is nuclear-armed.
I want to point to the leaked out defense intelligence assessment this week that claims it was set back only a few months. You have President Trump saying that they were obliterated. You just said that it appears that they've been severely damaged. Republican South Carolina senator, for example, just to balance this out, Lindsey Graham calls it a major league setback, years, not months. That was his quote. How much is this becoming political?
Inevitably, it becomes political to an extent. I try to be as measured and factual as possible. But one of the problems here is, Morgan, that the administration has been far from forthcoming with the facts. It's not only Congress that needs and deserves the facts. It's the American people, so that we can answer the kinds of questions you've been asking. And I'm sure you feel some sense of frustration. I feel it even more in the lack of precise and comprehensive factual responses to some of these questions. As yet, there has been no final battle damage assessment. So to say it was obliterated, well, I wouldn't use the word obliterated. There's a big difference between obliterated and severely damaged, which is the word that John Ratcliffe, the director of the CIA, has used. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has not said that the nuclear capability has been obliterated. He also has said that it was damaged significantly. I'm not quoting directly. That's a big difference. And what we need is for the American people, as well as Congress, to be fully informed and for the president to come clean with the American people. There is no reason at all for us to declare mission accomplished at this point, because it gives people a false sense of comfort and security at a time when we simply don't know, and Iran's capability may have been set back only months rather than years.
I'm Morgan Cunningham. This is Face Connecticut, and our guest this week is Connecticut U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. I'd like to go back to your statement that we started off with from June 22nd, and you say, quote, "The Constitution and War Powers Act require every president to inform Congress and seek approval for using American military force. President Trump has done neither," end quote. And often, as we mentioned, many of these issues do become political. I want to point out, looking back in history, there have been a few instances in which a president has acted without congressional approval. If we go far back to 1900, former President William McKinley sent 2,500 troops to the Boxer Rebellion without congressional approval. More recently, 2011, former President Barack Obama ordered strikes on Libya, but did tell House and Senate congressional leaders, so there is a difference there. Would you say that there's been some kind of a precedence or muddied waters about presidents acting militarily while sidestepping Congress?
There have been instances where the president has certainly taken action that could be viewed as an act of war requiring congressional approval under the Constitution. Of course, going back to President McKinley, I think is a little bit apples and oranges, because the nature of warfare has changed. The requirement for quick action is greater than ever. And I want to emphasize that I really hope that the president is right, that Iran's nuclear capability has been obliterated. I hope that we have stopped a nuclear-armed Iran, because it is such a threat to the world, including the United States and Israel. And I think we need to stand with Israel and help provide it the means to protect itself against any Iranian retaliation, notwithstanding the ceasefire that's been agreed to. Of course, bombing our way to peace, not likely to work, as long as they have the capability to reconstitute their nuclear program. But I think you're right to point to the grave potential for these issues becoming political. And what I've tried to do is really just be very bipartisan and measured and fact-based. And I am awaiting that final battle assessment to know what the damage has been.
The Iranian attack on an American base in Qatar has been seen as a low-level warning, if you will, to the United States. At least that's how Iran is framing it, not to get further involved. Do you believe that Iran poses a further threat to U.S. assets in that region? And if so, how best can we protect or shore up our assets, troops, other personnel?
It absolutely is a threat. In fact, I've visited one of our bases in Jordan on the border with Syria, close to Tower 22, another base where three Americans were killed. American servicemen died because of an attack by one of the militias in the area. It was armed and supported by Iran. Most certainly Iran is a toxic element in Hezbollah, Hamas, Houthi activities that endanger our troops, 40,000 of them in the region. We need to be mindful about protecting them along with other personnel in the area. I warned about that possibility in the very statement that you have been citing, and the danger, if anything, has grown in the meantime. But let me be very clear. The requirement for congressional approval is in the Constitution for a reason. The founders wanted Congress to be involved in acts of war because we are supposed to be closer to the people we represent. The President of the United States is elected every 4 years. He sits in Washington. He's one person. We are people who fan out across the United States literally every weekend. I come back to Connecticut every weekend. I listen to the people of Connecticut at fairs and parades, town halls, meetings, in many ways. And I know what they're thinking and feeling. And I feel myself the reluctance to commit American troops, put them in harm's way, when I know the moms and dads and loved ones and know the losses that may occur. I'm a dad of two veterans, one a United States Marine who fought in Afghanistan, the other a Navy SEAL. I know what it's like to be a dad waking up in the middle of the night wondering what's happening halfway across the world. And so Congress is involved for a reason, namely that the people of the United States ought to have a say when their loved ones are put in harm's way. And there's another reason as well, Morgan, which is history shows that presidents rarely succeed in armed conflict or war when the country isn't behind them. If you look at the history of Vietnam, of Iraq and Afghanistan, almost every war where the majority of American people opposed it, success has been very difficult to achieve. So the president's in a much stronger position when he has the American people behind him. That's the reason for the constitutional provision. It's also the reason for the War Powers Act, which specifically, in effect, specifies the way that Congress's approval should be sought. So I believe very strongly that our troops in the region, 40,000 of them, are in a potentially risky, dangerous situation because of the possibility of Iranian retaliation. The strike that you mentioned on the base in Qatar was certainly less intense and damaging than it could have been. And they warned us. Here's the important point. The Iranians warned us and gave us sufficient time to move troops away from the base. The only ones left there were troops who were manning the Patriot air defense capability by and large. And so we were able to move a lot of our troops away from the base so they would not be in greater danger because the Iranians, in effect, programmed the retaliatory strike in a way that would do minimal damage. And in fact, at the end of the day, virtually no damage was done. We intercepted all but one of the Iranian missiles, and that one landed harmlessly.
This is Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham, and my guest this week is Connecticut U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. Glad to be spending some time with him and getting his thoughts on the U.S. strike on Iran involved in a conflict with Israel. I want to point to something that happened in the House this past week. 128 Democrats, including four from Connecticut, sided with Republicans this past week, tabling a resolution that would have started an impeachment proceeding against President Trump on an abuse of power charge. How would you feel about an impeachment proceeding over that issue, or do you see another remedy?
I don't see impeachment as a likely or warranted remedy at this point.
President Trump has suggested regime change, but has appeared to distance himself from the idea of having the United States behind it. And there have been some people who have pointed to Syria, where the people had essentially revolted. This was last year. Do you stand for a regime change in Iran? Or if you were to, how would you want to see it accomplished?
I think the Iranian people deserve a different government and a different set of rulers. I don't think that the present regime represents the real interests or views of the Iranian people. I am very hopeful that there will be a change in governments, and it will mean less conflict, not only with the United States, but also with Israel and with Iran's neighbors in the Gulf. As afraid as we are of Iranian continued terrorism and aggression, and maybe I should just amend the word afraid to be opposed, the Gulf states are equally so. They have Iran, in effect, as a neighbor, and not a very good neighbor. So the entire region really feels that this government, this set of rulers, should be changed. And I feel that way, certainly. Now, the president has said that regime change was not the objective of this mission. I want to know what remains of the nuclear fuel, uranium that has been enriched, where the centrifuges are, what remains of Iran's nuclear capability. Those are factual questions that need to be answered, because they will bear on the topic of whether these rulers will continue to pursue nuclear arms, which is intolerable for the region and for the world. And again, I just want to emphasize, the president got out front Saturday evening, right after the mission was executed, a bold, brave, precisely and extraordinarily well executed mission by B-2 bombers that literally flew halfway around the world, and he used the word obliterated. I certainly wouldn't use that word based on what we know now. I hope we did as much damage as possible, because a nuclear-armed Iran is a dire threat to the entire world, including the United States. But we should have no false sense of comfort or security, because those rulers, that government, is still there. And they are still saying death to the United States, death to Israel, and in effect, death to their neighbors, the Gulf states, who are Sunni Muslim states, as opposed to Iran, which is a Shiite state.
Senator Blumenthal, my final question for you. President Trump has said that the U.S. and Iran are supposed to hold talks again. Iran came out with a statement just this past Thursday saying that talks have now become strained as a result of this conflict. But in any case, Senator, what can be achieved here, if anything? What do you want to see achieved? Can a new nuclear deal with Iran be reached? How does that look?
There is a really momentous opportunity, a moment for diplomacy that could provide a path to peace and stability in the region. The bombing that has taken place most recently, which has no doubt set back and damaged Iran's nuclear program, perhaps can provide a platform for successful diplomacy to reach an agreement that is ironclad in stopping a nuclear-armed Iran, provides for verification, accurate and credible verification, and enables Iran to join the community of nations that, in fact, seek to uphold peace, not create conflict and armed chaos. So bombing our way to peace simply won't work alone, but we have an opportunity now, a moment that can be seized. The question really is whether Iran is ready to be realistic and cooperative, whether President Trump will also be realistic and forthcoming. And I emphasize again the importance of being factual and forthcoming to the American people.
Senator Blumenthal, you've been very generous with your time. I appreciate it. I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you so much, Morgan. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.